Hello, and welcome to the Deathcast. I'm your host, best-selling author and journalist Ian Totten. I'd like to thank you for joining me as we once again prepare to look into the darker side of humanity. Before we get going, as always, I have the normal show notes and plugs. If you would like to follow me on social media, just search for Ian Totten, author, or the Deathcast. You can find me on most social media sites. If you are interested in signing up for the show's mailing list or making a donation to the show, you can go to CorpseCreekPublishing.com. You'll find the sign-up form for the mailing list, as well as a donate button that will take you to PayPal. For those of you who have donated, it is greatly appreciated. And if you are interested in becoming a Patreon member, just go to tinyurl.com/DCPatreon. For as little as $2 a month, you can get access to exclusive content as well as episodes that are no longer in the regular RSS feed. One thing that is going to be coming to the Patreon soon is I'm going to be recovering the West Memphis 3 case. This is because it has been requested of me by numerous people that I cover it without the background music that was present in the first 60 or so shows that I did. I've had a number of people reach out, ask me to recover the case without the background music, you know, asking if I would, you know, put it up on Patreon or in the RSS feed, so I am working on that currently, and hopefully it will be going up sooner rather than later. Lastly, if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. Like the show, subscribe to it, share it on social media, let all your friends know that you're a Deathcaster, or if you're a lady, you're a Deathcasterette. All right, now that all of that is out of the way, get yourself something to drink, find a nice comfy chair, kick back, relax, I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes, let's go into the crypt. This week's case is one that was requested through the show's email account, ian@CorpseCreekPublishing.com. We're going to be looking at the murder of Junko Furuta, which for anybody around 40 years old and up is a pretty famous case that took place in Japan back in 1989. Before I get into this case, because this case is such a horrific story, I do want to warn anyone who's a little bit squeamish that there may be things in this episode that might upset you and that you might not want to hear. So take that into account before we go forward. If this isn't your thing, that's cool. Go find another episode where the crime may not be as horrific. For those of you who are sticking around, I hope you're prepared because this one may be as horrifically brutal as it gets. I know I've stated in the past that the murder of Frank Carlson and the rape of his wife, Annette, is the most brutal case that I've ever come across. And while that is true, this one ranks up there in terms of brutality, as the young woman we're going to be talking about was sadistically tortured for 44 days. Some quick background on terms you're going to hear in this case. Japan is broken up into prefectures, which are really like states within the U.S. In Japan, there are 47 of these prefectures, which are each overseen by a prefect, who's kind of like a governor. You have cities inside of these prefectures. The prefectures we're going to be discussing in this case are Saitama Prefecture and the Tokyo Prefecture, both of which are located on the island of Honshu, which is the largest, most populated island in Japan. They're both in the south central area of the island of Honshu, with Adachi, Tokyo being roughly 18.5 miles southeast of Misato, Saitama. Junko Furuta was born on January 18th of 1971 in Misato, Saitama, Japan, which at the time of the crime had roughly 128,000 people living in it. Junko had a fairly standard upbringing. She was the middle of three children. There was an older brother and a younger brother. And at least according to everything that I could find, she was fairly well liked by her schoolmates and was seen as something of a quote-unquote good girl, meaning that she didn't drink, she didn't party, smoke cigarettes, do drugs, anything like that. Funko also had an after-school job working at a plastic molding factory, which if you live in Western countries, and by that I mean Canada, United States, Great Britain, France, the idea of a teenager working in a place like a plastic molding factory is kind of alien. There's no way that they would allow a student to work in a place like that. High school students generally work at places like gas stations, convenience store, fast food joints. She's working at this plastic molding factory. She's saving her money. And I've read a lot of different things on this aspect, some stating that she was saving the money for a graduation party she planned on throwing upon graduation later that year, others that she was saving the money for after she graduated. Both of these stories allude to the fact that in Japan, women are seen as something of a second-class citizen, whereas the men are kind of elevated higher than the women. Women kind of have to fend for themselves and find their own way, as the parents will focus most of their efforts and attention on the males. As I stated, Junko was fairly popular in school, with her friends referring to her as Jun-chan. She was known to be fairly intelligent, to have maintained excellent grades, and had relatively few absences. During 1989, she's a senior in high school. She's working at this plastics factory. She's able to secure a job for herself for after her graduation, working at an electronics retailer. A lot of stories give different takes on what exactly happened to Funko. The most prevalent being that there were members of the Yakuza within the high school that she attended, this being the Yoshio Minami High School, and that members of this organized crime group had taken notice of Funko because she was such a pretty young woman. They began to kind of lavish their attentions on her, which she was not interested in. As the story goes, one of these young men, Hiroshi Miyano, who was aged 18 at this point, had asked Funko if she would go out with him, and she declined this invitation, which infuriated the young man. Some background on Hiroshi Miyano was seen as the school bully. And Hiroshi and his friends, Yo Aruga, aged 17, Shinji Minato, aged 16, and Yasushi Watanabe, aged 17, were known for causing trouble. Miyano, who was the ringleader of this small troop, had been in trouble pretty much his entire life, from shoplifting to damaging school property and robberies. And some sources indicate that he had in fact been enrolled in a private school in Tokyo around 1986 in an effort to keep him from his criminalistic ways, and that despite this, he continued on with the things he was doing, eventually leaving the school the following year in 1987. Some sources state that he actually attended Yonko's high school, while others that by this point, Hiroshi Miyano had in fact completely dropped out of school and was living with the older sister of Yasushi Watanabe while working at a tile laying company, which he did not enjoy. And the reason he was working at this company, obviously he has to work to eat, but he was also trying to save up money so that he could marry his girlfriend. And you're probably scratching your head thinking, okay, so if he asks Yonko to go out with him, but he's got a girlfriend, what's the girlfriend thinking of all of this? Well, at least according to many different sources, Miyano, who we know was involved at the lowest rungs of organized crime, considered himself as something of a ladies' man, but more than that, his continued involvement in organized crime was something that his girlfriend did not like, and consequently, every time he would go out and pull a job or get into trouble for something, she would break up with him, which had to have made living in the apartment together a really tedious situation. Along with his other crimes, it's been said that Hiroshi also committed numerous sex crimes after dropping out of high school in 1988. Unfortunately, I don't read Japanese, so it's very difficult to know with certainty whether or not this was the case. I have to rely on the translations of others, which state that he was known to have committed sex crimes. Some sources indicate that what happened to Junko was pretty much a direct result of her turning down Hiroshi's advances. Again, it's difficult to get an exact timeline. We know that he did ask her out during a period when he was broken up with his girlfriend, and that Junko turned him down in any event. On November 25th of 1988, Miyano and Shinji Minateo were in Misato, and according to later court records, the two young men were there with the express intention of finding local women who they could sexually assault. At roughly 8:30 p.m., they saw Yonko riding her bicycle home from her part-time job at the plastics factory. And Miyano basically orders Shinji to kick Yonko off of her bicycle before running off into the night, at which point Hiroshi comes running to her aid and offers to walk her safely to her house. Yonko agrees to be walked to her home, and unfortunately, She doesn't understand the danger that she's in. Hiroshi, instead of leading her to her home, brings her to an abandoned warehouse where he informs her that he is in fact a member of the Yakuza, at which point he brutally rapes Yonko, informing her repeatedly that not only will she suffer should she make any noise, but he will also see to it that her family dies as well. Again, there are conflicting stories. Some of them state that after raping Yonko in the warehouse, he then brought her to a hotel room where he raped her once again before calling his friends to brag to them that he had raped this young girl, with one of his friends then stating that they should hold on to Yonko so that they can allow others to have their way with her. This particular version of the story then has Hiroshi dragging Yonko to a park at roughly 3 a.m., where his four friends are waiting, and the four of them, who had a known history in the Japanese court system of gang raping women, something that came out at trial. They had actually done this to another young girl prior to Yonko. They let that girl go. They rape her in this park. The parallel story to this is that after raping Yonko in the warehouse and threatening her life, Hiroshi actually just took her to the park where his friends were waiting and further sexual assaults happened. In any event, after this, Yonko was taken to a home owned by Hiroshi's family. This home was in the Ayase district of Adachi, which Adachi is in the Tokyo area of Japan. If you'll remember at the beginning of the episode, I talked about how they moved from one kind of state to another during the commission of this crime. So they went roughly 18 and a half miles southeast to this home where the boys further sexually assaulted Yonko. I'm sure by this point that many of you are getting pissed off, as am I, at the treatment of Yonko by these four pieces of shit. Unfortunately, though, it's going to get a lot worse, so prepare yourself. On November 27th, this is 2 days after Yonko goes missing, her parents, who are obviously concerned, contact the local police and inform them that, hey, our daughter is missing, and the police launch an investigation. In retaliation for this, Hiroshi forces Yonko to call her mother numerous times and inform her that, hey, no, everything's okay. I've run away from home. I'm staying with some friends. Please call off the police investigation. You know, I'm fine. I'm safe. And unfortunately, her parents believe this and went along with it, and the police investigation was stopped. Unbeknownst to all of them, obviously, this young woman is being horrifically savaged on an almost continuous basis by these four individuals. I want to point something out real quick, because if you look into the case, you're going to find an article that I'm not going to name the person. They wrote this. They said that there was, in fact, seven individuals involved with this. Outside of this article online, I could find no evidence whatsoever that seven people were involved. There was only four. I'm not saying this other person had faulty information, but there's only four people who were involved in this. These four individuals ended up basically making the home that Yonko was confined to their everyday hangout. But it does get worse, because Hiroshi's family lived inside of this home, And they believed that Yonko was simply their son's girlfriend. How this worked out, I can't understand, other than Yonko was so terrified of what was going to happen to her family, she must not have screamed out as she was sexually assaulted constantly. She was treated as a punching bag, spit on, basically degraded to levels that were subhuman by these four cocksuckers. Eventually, though, Hiroshi and his friends dropped the idea that Yonko was his girlfriend, as it became apparent to them that Hiroshi's parents did not care what their son was doing and, in fact, would not report them to the police. Later, Hiroshi's parents would claim that they didn't intervene and they didn't contact the authorities because they were themselves fearful of what their son might do in response, and my response to that is just bullshit. You know your kid's doing this thing, you've got to leave the house for work. It's not too damn hard to contact the cops while you're out and let them know, hey, my son's got this girl in our house and we believe that they're abusing her and we need you to come and check things out. And that would have been the end of it, but no, they would rather turn a blind eye to what their son was doing and allow these horrific things to continue. On November 28th, Roshi invited two other friends to come to the house. Now, these two other boys found Yonko upstairs in a room wearing a shirt and a skirt that Miyano had stolen for her a few days prior. And according to some sources, these two young men then began drinking cough syrup and, in an effort to scare the young girl, acted like they were high and insane, which forced Yonko to attempt to flee the house. According to court documents, Yonko was tackled and screamed in terror, which woke up Hiroshi's parents, who were told that nothing was going on, everything was fine. Again, of course, parents turning a blind eye, and at this point, they dragged Yonko back into the bedroom where they proceeded to gang rape her. Again, according to court documents, Yonko was believed to be unconscious at this point as she stared at the ceiling as though unseeing, which is something that you see quite often in cases of sexual assault. The victim will kind of detach from reality and just stare off blankly into the void and basically is just lying there waiting for this thing to be over with. If you've hung with me so far, again, I want to give a warning. They hold this young girl captive for 40 more days to drink large quantities of alcohol and milk, burning her with lit cigarettes and lighter fluid, shaving her pubic hair, violating her with various objects, including lit matches and bottles, making her pleasure herself in front of them, all the while they're continuously gang raping and beating this young girl senseless. And the parents do nothing. They turn a blind eye. You've got these four hooligans in the house who are dragging other individuals into the home to sexually assault this young girl, and you do nothing. And I'm sorry, I have to believe that this has to do more with women's place within Japanese society than it does with the parents' supposed fear of their son. Because women are second-class citizens in Japan. They were back in 1988, 1989. They still are in 2023. So they're doing all of this horrific stuff to this young girl, savaging her in every way possible, and feeding her as little food as possible, really just enough to keep her alive. And eventually, Yonko reaches a point where she's unable to leave the second floor where Miyano's bedroom and bathroom are located. They were allowing her to go downstairs to use the bathroom before dragging her back up, where they again would continue with their assaults. Again, the parents just turned a blind eye because they were afraid, even though it was obvious they could not have not seen what was happening to this girl. Because by December, her face was so swollen, it has been stated, that it looked like a basketball. These fuckers just went about business as though nothing was going on. So, now we're into December, and Yonko is confined to the room. Basically, she's too weak to walk. I'm sure at this point she has given up the will to live. According to court records, Yonko's body eventually began giving off what was described as a rotting smell, which led the four perpetrators to lose interest in having any kind of relations with her. And because of this, they went and found a 19-year-old girl who was on her way home from work, dragged her home, and gang-raped her in the presence of Yonko before releasing her. According to some sources, one of the individuals who came over to the house to rape Yonko was really disturbed by this, as he had been bullied into it. And upon returning home, he told his older brother, who informed him that you need to contact the police about this. So the police sent two inspectors over to the Minato family's home, but these two officers declined an invitation to come inside and inspect it. Not long after this, Yonko herself was able to get her hands on a phone, and she made a call to the police station and was quickly discovered by the assailants. And after this, they decided that she needed to be punished, so they set her on fire. Yonko goes into convulsions and sadly survives. And I say sadly not because I wish death on this girl, but after all of the horrificness that she has been subjected to, at this point in time, it would be almost a blessing for her to be relieved of the hell that she has had to endure. On January 4th of 1989, Hiroshi decided to challenge Yonko to a game of Mahjong, which apparently, despite everything that had happened to her, Yonko was able to play and beat Hiroshi in, which caused him to fly into a rage, and he horrifically assaulted Yonko yet again. Some sources state that this didn't actually happen, that in fact, Hiroshi had played a game of Mahjong with another person the previous day and lost handedly, so that when he came home, he assaulted Yonko again before pouring lighter fluid on her body, before setting her on fire, at which point Hiroshi and the other four perpetrators began to savagely beat Yonko, pouring hot wax onto her face, holding lit candles to her eyes, forcing her to drink her own urine, throwing her through a stereo unit, which apparently set Yonko into a further series of convulsions. And the boys looked at this young woman lying in the bedroom of this fucker, and decided, hey, we should continue with this. So they went and got plastic bags and put them over their hands before continuing the savage assault. Yonko, by this point, is unconscious. She's bleeding profusely, and there's pus coming out of the various burns on her body, and yet they continue to beat her, dropping an iron exercise ball onto her stomach a number of times. Some accounts have it that this attack lasted for a total of 2 hours. Unbeknownst to these shitbags, Yonko perished as a result of this beating. And the following day, January 5th, Hiroshi was out of the house, and his brother contacted him to let him know that Yonko had died. Hearing this, Hiroshi rushes home and gets his buddies together, and they wrap Yonko's body in blankets and shove her inside of a duffel bag before leaving the house, before finding a 55-gallon drum and placing Yonko inside of it, before filling the drum with cement. They then took this drum and loaded it inside their vehicle and drove around before settling on a empty lot in the Wakusa Koto Ward of Tokyo, which was known as a popular dumping ground for large appliances and other things that people just no longer had a use for. So they dump this barrel into the field and hope that basically nobody pays any attention to it. They left from there believing that they had gotten away with murder. On January 23rd, Hiroshi Miyano and Yo Ogura were both arrested for the gang rape that they had participated in December. If you'll remember, this is the 19-year-old girl who, having lost interest in Yonko, they abducted on her way home from work. Well, she went to the police and fingered these fuckers, and these two were arrested for it. The police go and they search both of their homes, and they discover a pair of women's underwear, which they bring back to the station, and they start questioning Hiroshi about these. A couple of things stand out to me about this. They couldn't have done a very thorough investigation of Hiroshi's home if the only thing that they found were his underwear. They held this young girl from somewhere to 40 to 44 days, savagely assaulting her. It's been stated that by the time of her death, she stunk almost like a dead body, yet the police noticed none of this other than a pair of women's underwear. So they bring the underwear back, and they're questioning Hiroshi about this. And thinking that Ogura had possibly flipped on him and ratted him out to the police, Hiroshi breaks down and tells them where they can find Yonko's body. At first, the police were skeptical about this, as when they brought the underwear to Hiroshi, they'd been specifically trying to find out about a murder that had taken place prior to Yonko going missing, in which a mother and her 7-year-old son were both killed. On the 24th of January, the police went to the field where it was indicated that Yonko's body had been dumped inside the 55-gallon drum, and they recovered the drum. Obviously, they find her encased inside of concrete, inside of this duffel bag, and once they are able to get all of this separated, they find a videotape inside of the duffel bag with Yonko's body, which they find odd. And when pressed about this, Hiroshi states that there was a television show that Yonko continuously expressed regret over not being able to see the final episode of, and that after her death, he had decided that he needed to get a copy of the tape and send it with her into the afterlife, as he felt certain that if he did not do this thing, Yonko's ghost would return and haunt him. On April 1st of 1989, Yogura was arrested for a separate sexual assault as well as the murder of Yonko, with the arrests of Watanabe Minato and Minato's brother following soon after. And according to various accounts, several other individuals were arrested as a result of what had taken place at Hiroshi's parents' home. Yonko's body was eventually identified through her fingertips. Police found more than that on Yonko's body. They also found DNA, which implicated Tetsuo Nakamura and Koichi Ehara. These two individuals were eventually charged with rape. Japan, like a lot of countries, have laws that protect the rights of juvenile offenders. So, initially, although Yonko's murder made national headlines, the identities of the individuals were referred to as simply Boy A, Boy B, Boy C, Boy D, Boy E, Boy F. However, a newspaper in Japan, the Shukan Bushan, were so horrified by what had been done to Yonko that they dug into the crime and uncovered the names of the individuals responsible. And then they published the names, which sent shockwaves throughout Japan, as this was unheard of and it was unprecedented and could have resulted in serious legal consequences for the magazine. However, the magazine stood fast on the grounds that what had been done to Yonko was, quote, so depraved and so serious, the accused did not deserve the right to anonymity. To avoid possibly longer prison sentences, all four men ended up pleading guilty to committing bodily harm that results in death. And in July of 1990, Hiroshi Miyano was sentenced to 17 years in prison, while the other three perpetrators ended up getting between 3 and 9 years. The lengths of their sentences obviously do not represent the severity of their crimes, and many commentators in Japan have stated that it is more likely than not that the four men received these sentences not because Japan's prison system is more focused on rehabilitation than it is punishment, than it is that the judicial system was fearful of reprisal from the Yakuza for imprisoning them for a lengthy period of time, which is very possible, as the Yakuza are an extremely powerful organization within Japan to this day, and it does make sense that people within the prison system feared for their own safety and those of their family had they given out the sentences that these pieces of garbage deserved. Hiroshi Miyano ends up appealing his sentence, and as a result of this, he's given a further 3 years, so he ends up doing 20 years in prison before getting out and going to live with his mother. However, this piece of shit could not stay out of trouble. He was arrested and imprisoned in 2013 for fraud, and then arrested again in 2018 after he beat a man with a metal rod and slashed his throat with a knife. As for the others, Yo-Ogura was released in August of 1999 and subsequently changed his name. Many reports indicate that he is boastful about his involvement in the rape, torture, and murder of Yonko Fatata. In July of 2004, Uruga was arrested after assaulting a man who he thought was sleeping with his girlfriend. It's stated that Ogura tracked the man down, beat him, shoved him into a truck, and then drove him from Adachi to his mother's home in Meseto, where he beat the man for a further 4 hours, repeatedly informing him that he would kill him as he had done so before and would be able to get away with it. A girl was eventually sentenced to 7 years imprisonment for this crime and has since been released. One area of interest further concerning Ogura is that his mother has allegedly defaced uncle's grave on numerous occasions, and she has done this because Yonko quote-unquote ruined her son's life, which shows you what a piece of shit that cunt is. Obviously, Yonko's parents were devastated by the loss of their daughter and upon learning what had happened to her, but they were also enraged at the light sentences that the perpetrators had done, and they took out a civil suit against Hiroshi's family and won, with the Furuta family receiving 50 million yen, which is roughly $425,000. On April 2nd, 1989, Yonko's funeral was held. And according to an article, at this funeral procession, one of her friends gave a memorial address that stated, "Yu Chan, welcome back. I never imagined that we would see you again in this way. You must have been in so much pain, so much suffering. The happy we made for the school festival looked really good on you. We will never forget you. I have heard that the principal has presented you with a graduation certificate, so we graduated together, all of us. Yun Chan, there is no more pain, no more suffering. Please rest in peace." While the company that Yonko was planning on working for upon her graduation from high school presented her family with the uniform that she was going to have worn when she started her position, and this uniform was placed into the casket with Yonko. Further, when her class graduated, they actually did a diploma for Yonko. Before I wrap this up, I'm going to read a piece that was published on the UnseenJapan.com website by Alyssa Pearl Fusek. I'm reading it because it gives a good idea of how the Japanese press dealt with one of the largest crimes that had ever taken place in Japan up to that period of time. Hanada Kazushiki, who was editor-in-chief of Shukan Bunshun at the time of the murder, talked about the process of acquiring the real names in an interview with Ashi Shimbun. "We used pseudonyms in our first article on the incident. However, while collecting information for the second article, I realized how awful this situation was, so I brought up that we should use their real names to the editorial department. To make a long story short, we decided that beasts don't have human rights." Hanada continued to say that publishing the juveniles' real names presented a fairly difficult problem, but they made an exception because it was a very terrible incident. Hanada also stated that while he recognized that going public with the real names violated juvenile law, he noted that there were no penalty regulations in place to punish them. Again, that is from the UnseenJapan.com website, an article entitled Virata Junko, The Horrific Murder That Tested Japan by Alyssa Pearl Fusek. So that is the story of Junko Virata. I hope you've enjoyed it, if you've made it this far. Again, I warned you at the beginning, this is an extremely horrific case. We're going to end the show at this point. If you enjoyed it, please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review wherever it is that you get your favorite podcasts. Please don't forget to check out the official website, CorpseCreekPublishing.com. While there, you can see various novels I've written, sign up for the mailing list, as well as make a donation should you be so inclined. And don't forget to check out tinyurl.com/DCPatreon, where for as little as $2 a month, you can help with the production of this show, as well as get access to exclusive content. Until next time, the Deathcast is a production of Corpse Creek Publishing. Stay morbid!